Good, excellent. So, yeah, so tell me a little bit about how you came to be involved in digital photography.
Well, it was the only thing I could do, actually, because I couldn't work in architectural design anymore, I know enough, and I was sick and tired of graphic design, and I just I morphed into it. And with pictures, people wanted pictures, and that was the end.
Excellent, okay, okay. That's the shortest podcast ever. I should be asking more Socratic questions. What does being in what would it say about you? What do you think your style of photography says about you?
I'm a lazy bastard.
Minimalism.
Yeah. because I've moved more now into video and storytelling that way, I kind of feel as if I've wasted about 30 years not doing it sooner, or it not being picked out at an earlier age. I'm not going to blame my parents for that, because they're not high IQ people. They're not mindful like that. But I moved into film because I realised that it was accessible. And this is going back to 1998, when I started to do more contracting, 2000, more contracting, IT contracting, and building up a bigger stock of quite expensive cameras, but with absolutely no idea what I wanted to do with them. So I spent thousands and thousands of pounds on cameras, had an idea about how to film, and then realized that actually at that time you had to spend a fortune on hardware, computing, in order to build up a piece of technology to do it. And then actually I got to the point where it ruined me, because the frustration was so great that I didn't know what I was. It was aimless, basically, completely aimless.
So did you have lots of garage sales?
I did end up selling quite a lot of equipment in the end. And then I left it and went back into taking pictures that I got better and better at.
You mentioned before the idea of storytelling. With movies, that makes sense. We use some storytelling in movies. In photography, how do you translate that idea through to photography in a still image?
So documentary style photography for me is about living in the moment with the subject at that time, and what happens. One of the reasons why I fell into doing the documentary photography was because I was always doing press photography, because I was one of only a handful of people, freelancers, who had a digital camera at the time. And albeit very basic, it was enough to be able to get pictures in the press, because I could actually email. I could go to a shoot, email a shot straight to the news desk, and all of a sudden they've got a picture, because they'd be waiting still for their traditional staffers to upscale their gear, well, papers to upscale them to digital. And I was already there. And then it started coming out, and then I got less and less work from it. But by that time, I'd already got excited about the idea of just being able to walk into an environment and record what's happening live, without any setup, without any flash, let's just capture what we can capture here.
And what is it they like about that? Why?
It's realistic. It's authentic. It's natural. It's not forced issue. It's just something simple that allows people to go from to look at a picture and think, actually, I quite like that. And I think I'm influenced by lots of other photographers, but not as much in my techniques. I just like the look of the work. Cartier-Bresson's a perfect example. He was a now called street photographer, but he just documented life on planet Earth with people in it. It was moments in time, and being there, and being able to capture something and see something that other people didn't.
It's a unique eye.
It's a unique perspective, and I always loved that. You know, you're sitting around, even where we're sitting now. You know, you're just looking around, and I can see a couple of absolutely cracking angles that work. You know, that tell this story, even down from the guy who's just served us coffee, right the way through to the people at tables just having a bit of different narrative, people intensely focused on what they're doing.
If you have the eye for the detail, people always tell their story writ large in their environments, their nests, how they dress. It's all there if you've got the eye to pick it up. Mm. One thing I do want to ask, when you took the leap from to digital photography, you were ahead of the game there.
Yeah.
And that gave you a kind of an advantage. Yeah. What's the next thing that you think will change photography? What's the next big thing that will give someone a competitive
advantage?
It's already
happened, and it happened a long time ago, and it's put a lot of photographers out of business and out of work, and that's the advent of mobile phone. The mobile phone was people looked at it, said, how can you send a crappy picture in from really low quality to a newspaper? It's just because it's irrelevant. It's about the consumption of the information, not necessarily the quality of it. And whilst I would, you know, any decent photo editor, photo desk worth the salt working with a good editor, would immediately look at the picture to tell, how does that picture tell the story? If that shot is above the fold, how can that picture tell the story and match the headline in its same impact? But that's morphed away a little bit. It's, you know, you only need to look at online content to see how the quality of everything has completely nosedived, and it's gone from being really well thought out, structured documentary press photography to that's just a picture taken on an iPhone. I've taken pictures on an iPhone. I've had them submitted and made front page on numerous times with iPhone photos. But it's down to composition. Get the lighting right, get the look right, engaging with people, make sure they can actually see what you can see.
So do you think photography
what you can't see.
Do you think photography will just therefore become a refinement of the mobile phone, or do you think there's another technology that's going to come in that's going to change things dramatically, a big shake-up, something disruptive?
I would like to say so, but ultimately photography is based upon the rules of physics. I mean, that's the only time you see any kind of transformational innovation in that, is by seeing it go from, well, how do we transcend physics in order to change the narrative of photography?
AI
still requires basic physics to be input in order to create an image. So it would have to be almost like three-dimensional thinking. How do you display that? I think it's how it's viewed would change the method of capture. So a good example would be, imagine you were able to take a 3D photograph of someone's head, you know, a portrait, and that be displayed in a 3D format. It's probably the next stage of innovation. But
hologram-like kind of...
almost like a Star Trekian style.
Well, they've got spatial audio, haven't you? You can place things...
Ambisonic. Ambisonic audio. I have equipment to record ambisonic audio, but... And you can use that with 360 video, to get a fully immersive experience. But there's a huge gap. How do you go from the capture to your target market when not everybody's got a 360 headset?
I think there's a big space. I often bring things back to the individual, but the consumer of this stuff, especially around kind of deep fakes and AI, I think there's so much that we've got to teach people how to interpret these things and how to be critical about them, because there's the opportunity for people to be deceived and lied to through deep fakes particularly is staggering.
I see it.
So I think education to people on the viewer of how to interpret these things and how to be more balanced in their opinions of them.
I think the process of education is paramount, because the need to consume transcends the need to be educated at the moment. And that is a major concern for me.
And that gap is running away.
It's cavernous now. You need to make a quantum leap in learning and learning methodology to get people to catch up now to recognise the divide between consumerism and what is items you're being fed based upon metrics versus reality of it. Like I see too many times people come to Ross Thurm, for instance, and the first thing they do is they look at the church, and then the second thing they do, they take the phone out and they take photographs of it. And then all they do is they spend most of the time taking pictures of various angles, put the phone away, the dwell time is hardly anything at all, and then they leave. When realistically, if you're going to go and look at one of the oldest churches in the area and go and have a look at the gravestones and see the stuff there from 1600, sometimes I think even older, it's an old location.
I know,
with an amazing view.
Take a picture, you've done it. You've got it. It's stored.
And it's the consumability of a visual. If the phone is actually making it easy just to consume, to say I've done this, and you bought, then it's a ven of consumerized lifestyle, along with a need to validate that action. So that's it's not ego led. It's what's it called? It's a virtue signaling mechanism to say, I have done this. Here's the platform on which I've shared.
And here's my token to show it. Whereas what should be happening, what I think people need to be educated to do, is go to somewhere, experience it, have an emotion about it, and then find a way of documenting that feeling. That's where good art, where good photography is.
Well, that is art.
That's when it captures the emotion of it, not just, I've got a picture of it, I've caught it, it's in my pocket.
One of the most perfect ways
collecting.
To... stamp collecting is part of social consumer culture. One of the most important sequences in a science fiction film that exemplifies a visual transcending into something that needed to have been spoken. Trying to figure this out in a way, and it's it. It was a scene where Jodie Foster was in the capsule. And obviously, it is interdimensional, or however it was. And she had found her way floating next to a giant Stella nursery.
Okay.
And it was an epic scene. She is there, and she's looking. The camera is pulling in to her face, and you can see the hint of what's going on outside the capsule. And at the same time, you can see the emotion is building in a face. And then it cuts to what she's looking at. And it's this magnificent spread of light, color, and texture that is thousands upon thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, if not millions of light years across. So huge, it is unimaginable to quantify the scale in human terms.
Yeah.
But the incredible beauty of it, or I know it's CGI, but the incredible beauty of Contact.
Contact, okay.
She's there, and she said they should have sent a poet.
Yes,
and as soon as I saw that,
lovely.
As soon as I heard that line, that grounds you with not just great filmmaking and great writing,
but the reality of the human value.
Where what is it we're forgetting? She's surrounded in this incredible advancement of
alien
technology.
You could even try to compute that in numbers, but that doesn't translate.
It's unquantifiable.
Emotionally.
Yeah, yeah. It's for human beings to witness that to see that is the point where. It's the point where we've started to forget that now. We're starting to move so far away from, let's just not live in the moment, because that's not the same sort of thing. But to enjoy the moment, to actually absorb.
To have the critical facilities to understand it, interpret it, and understand your emotions about it. Living in the moment is more of a passive thing. It's like letting things happen to you.
I think
you need to live in the moment. You need to actually be aware of what's going on, how you're feeling about it, and make some sense of it.
Yeah,
I had that feeling when we saw the Aurora Borealis. That same feeling. You kind of go, oh my God, I need someone to... A picture is going to do nothing for this.
Yeah,
totally. There's millions of them. Totally. I want to sit and watch it and how it moves. And
you want words.
You want something just encapsulates it for me. And that's it for me. It doesn't have to be a photograph. It can be something else.
Well, that is
always...
That's another perfect example of how we've lost our ability to feel things. Mm. We're losing our ability to feel something. Feeling can be brought on by a visual representation, and that goes right back to documentary photography and documentary filmmaking. It's the feeling. It's not the. I mean, how many times? I wouldn't half expect people in the next 5 years, if we're continuing on the current trajectory, to be sat in the cinema and they see something they really like the look of, to photograph it.
Yeah.
and they've lost the point of why they were there in the cinema in the first place. And I find that is that's a dawning of our reality now.
I think it's people, we need to find a way to help people understand how to think and how to feel. And I think it's true of in so many areas of life. I see people wanting power and people achieving power politically all the time, but not knowing how to handle power, not knowing how it corrupts you, not being armed with the wisdom or the core principles to kind of carry the weight of power. Mm. They want it, but don't know how to handle it. And when they get there, they can be corrupt and they're shitbags.
I can tell you now.
But we need to teach people how to cope with those things, how to think, how to feel. Yeah, so that is something that we need to be doing with children.
The re-educational process.
Grab it. Mm. So that's important.
I agree. It's about enjoying and I mean, unfortunately, we're in a dark place emotionally, I think, as a species, for certainly for kids, because they are living their lives through their phones. Mm. And it's not an old person talking. It's not. I have this constant running battle with my father-in-law. He constantly blames the way that kids are behavior on social media.
Yeah.
And I keep saying to trying to explain to him, it's not social media. That's just a platform. That's just a thing. It's how people use social media and what they put on it. The actual platform is very clever. It's brilliant. It's fine. There's nothing wrong with it. It's just the people that use it. That's where the problem is. The constancy of that, and that is for me where we've got a real problem. I mean, just sitting here now watching people walk by, I've seen groups of kids and they're all talking to each other. But then when you get like two, they're just looking at the phone, walking along the street.
Yeah.
Which is remarkable. Remarkable. I mean.
But see. Recognising that and thinking about that and then trying to come up with an understanding of that is the skill that I don't see many people having. We just kind of accept that that's the way it is.
Because it's because we have given up on actually forcing back the tide. We've given up on trying to tell somebody they shouldn't be doing something, or even trying to find a way that you should consider something else, because all of a sudden their rights have been impacted. And I see that all of the time. You just even just express an opinion as how something should be, and that is like, well, I've got, what are you talking about? You can't tell me I can do that. I've got. And that hostility, and it's because ultimately they realize they know what they're doing is wrong, yet fall into a trap of saying, well, the only way to actually do this is to become hostile and defensive.
That's interesting.
I see that all the time.
What did you say then? We've lost the ability to push back.
Yeah, we have. Because the energy required to push back versus what we're now greeted with, which is mostly unfathomable logic, or no logic whatsoever, really. It's not even unfathomable. It's just there's no logic to the behaviour.
But we do need to regroup and start doing that. We need to push these things make a stand.
It's getting worse. It's getting worse. And it's actually accepting that an opinion isn't fact. That's another thing.
Yeah.
An opinion isn't fact. And people think that
alternative facts.
Alt facts.
Alt facts. When she said that was, who was that? That was one of Trump's team said it. And when she said that, you just thought that's, she's gave license to that as an idea now. That is going to go.
Alt facts, yeah.
Alternative facts. You have a set of alternative facts. No. They're facts or not facts.
It's binary. Facts are binary. Yeah. They're either truths or they're... Yeah. Or they're
no, yeah. These are my facts.
No. That's up there with Clinton, Monica Lewinsky, when he was on trial.
Depends
on what your definition of is.
Yeah.
Sorry, what?
That's a duplicitous sophistry.
It's absolute nonsense, man. You're the President of the United States and you can't even define... You're trying to... offer some kind of obfuscation to a word that actually is just basic common English. You ridiculous man. Anyway, appear to have drifted onto politics.
I think that's a good test.
Yeah, it's a good test. Do you like that?
We fell into a podcast mode very simply, didn't we? Very quickly.
Because we're good talkers. That's
thank you.
Thank you.